my absolute pleasure to introduce Brian Sapanzek. Is that right?
Yeah, you got it right.
And he's the director of In the Shadow of God, the award-winning Rule Breaker movie from the Hellbound Horror Festival. Welcome, Brian. How are you doing?
I'm great. Thanks so much for having me. And it was an honor. It was a pleasure being in your festival. It's a really cool fest you put on. So thanks so much.
How did you hear about the festival? Because it's not in a bricks and mortar location, you can only find it based on the URL. You can't search for it on Film Freeway. So how did you first find out about the festival?
I think it was just, as I'm scrolling through on Instagram, just finding what people like and kind of trying to grow our brand, you know, with Olive Room Pictures. And, you know, you like someone else's stuff, you get more likes. So I think I was kind of scrolling through and I just saw your logo and I saw some other people were liking it. So I think I found it. I just kind of stumbled upon it that way. And I was like,
that's cool.
Yeah. Got to submit to it.
Well, funny you say about the logo. That's something that stuck out for me when I saw the poster art and the teasers and everything for your film was the, I'm not going to say almost Blair Witch kind of icon, but it's its own thing. And that kind of inspired me to use it as an aerial on the house for the poster art that we created, as though it's kind of drawing people in some way. So yeah, it's an absolute pleasure to kind of showcase your film, because anyone watching it, all the feedback I've seen from other filmmakers, even Ian Rayburn, who won the Film Festival, the main award, he remarked on how good the cinematography was, direction. So he was a big fan as well.
Well, that's awesome. That's great to hear.
Yeah, but absolute props on the film, because it's one of those things that it felt like a movie. I know it sounds ridiculous, and you've worked on some huge projects. I know you've been on like mega sets as well.
Yeah.
But yeah, if you can tell me about the kind of genesis of the film, where did the kind of idea first come from?
Yeah, absolutely. I wanted to explore generational trauma and just, certain things that are handed down to you from, you know, just even within your family, where it's kind of like, whether it be genetics or,
yes,
you know, I think we all kind of deal with something from our family where it's out of your control, but it's like, sorry, this is kind of how it is now, whether it be, you know, some sort of ailments. In this case, you know, we were diving into more like alcoholism, how that can be passed down just through genetics, right? And all of a sudden you're predisposed to it. Did I say that right?
It's fine.
You know what, how you're all of a sudden you're at high risk and you're like, oh, okay, I didn't really do anything to exacerbate that, but I didn't say that word right either.
I'll be your filter. I'm your judge, because you know we're the originators of the language, so we'll let you off with that.
I appreciate that. I'm still working on my coffee here, so
yeah. That's what I've got as well.
Nice. But yeah, I wanted to, you know, show that in a supernatural setting. So it's, you know, in this case, it's manifested with, you know, Rachel's coming back to deal with her father's affairs after he's passed away. Hasn't been a great relationship, and we showed it in this case with a malevolent spirit that's also found in the cellar that's been dug up. And now Rachel's thrust in a situation that's out of her control, much that her father left. So it's just kind of like, it's mirroring what he had to go through. Now she's dealing with it herself, and it's exploring in both of those kind of ways. So
I read that you shot this in 5 days, and I know your team of people around you must have had their heads screwed on to kind of get this done in 5 days. So
absolutely.
Was there a lot of prep? Obviously, was there a lot of prep and like storyboarding, and how did that kind of work out?
Yeah, we did as much as we can. We shot on location, which was about 2.5 hours away from Vancouver. So we had to take a ferry and then drive another hour and a half to this kind of desolate location. And it was an Airbnb find, which was amazing. The owners were like,
so did you kind of clear that with them? Like you could,
oh yeah,
to shoot 100%. Film and everything. Yeah.
Yeah. And they were totally down with it. They're like, yeah, how about we charge you like, I don't know, 10 extra bucks a day. I was like, yeah, that sounds great.
It's open. It's really kind of just to sidestep that just a moment, but Airbnb has kind of opened this up massively, I think, with location scouting and being able to shoot in almost any kind of location. As long as like you got clearances and permissions, it's a great idea.
Yeah. A lot of people, I think, are hesitant, though, which, you know, rightfully so, if you're going to have a lot of people and equipment in the place. And they'll, as soon as they hear a movie, I think around BC and Vancouver, especially, because it's such a hybrid for filming up here, they're like, oh, we can charge way more. And it can get a little bit nightmarish. But we were lucky that it was, again, we were kind of desolate. We're off the beaten path, which was great. But for, you know, storyboarding and that, I was able to go there. We stayed there, me and my wife and some friends, which was awesome. So I was able to kind of shotlist then. I went out again with my DP, and that was kind of it. We just did as much as we could running around the property. But as far as prep, that was the tough part because, you know, we had to make this cellar on the property as well. So we had to dig a bit, which I'm sure Airbnb hosts love it when you have to dig holes in their properties.
Yeah.
But we could only do it. We couldn't prep until we got there. Right. So it's because we have to ferry everybody over.
Yeah.
People are missing the ferries. And then you have to drive. You have to all meet and get there. So it was definitely a lot of running around. But yeah, we shot a lot. There was also a lot that we cut from the film. We had to cut it down because it was just too long. No one wants to program a 25-minute short. So, but
that's kind of it. There's a sweet spot for a lot of festivals, isn't there? You know, anything sub around 3 or 4 minutes, then it's 15, and then there's how do we want to kind of shop this around? I think that was a kind of quite a wise decision. But was literally everything shot on location, even the other kind of kitchen scenes, because there's little flashes to other areas? Is that the same house or somewhere else?
No, we did 3 days on the Sunshine Coast, and then we made our way to Vancouver. We shot in an apartment there for some of the flashbacks. Then we went out further, closer to the border, so another hour and a half south. And we shot on my friend's farm, who had a great barn that we used for the inside of the cellar. And
just great location. Kind of really nice.
Yeah, it worked out well. So it was cool.
And I've got to say thank you. This is a small thing for shooting a location with a torch that doesn't look bright enough already. Do you know what I mean? Because there's so many films that fall foul of that, where why are they using a torch? I understand it's, you know, it's the makeup of a film, but you can actually, it looks like you need a torch in the space, if you know what I mean. So,
oh, awesome. Yeah, so, yeah, of course you want everything to make sense, especially if it's on camera. Right. And
yeah.
And there's something just so creepy when it's just, it falls off a black outside of that flashlight beam, you know? So
yeah,
I'm happy.
It was really great to see it because we had such a huge variety of films, from 30 second kind of people trying to submit anything like around 30 seconds to we had something that was half an hour, and I'm like, I can't program it into like an afternoon of films, because it's there's only a very small team. It's me, my wife, and one other person that goes through all the films. And then we had about 20 people that watch the films and kind of pass judgment and all of that, you know. So this would definitely have been nominated for other awards, but obviously it kind of fell foul of that small rule we had about the 15 minutes. But it's a fantastic film. It felt like tonally right up my street, because I'd watched Spiral on Shudder. I don't know if you've seen Spiral, but not the awful Jigsaw movie, not the Saw movie, but there's
Was that done by
it is a glorious film. But it's a great movie. It's same kind of tone.
If that's the same one, that's one of our friends, Kurt Harder, who wrote and directed that, I'm pretty sure.
Oh, really?
He's a super talented guy. But that's really cool to hear. We were just chatting about that the other day.
Oh, that's great. That's quite a lucky coincidence.
He's a Vancouver guy as well.
I absolutely love the film. I think Sarah Canning's stellar. She's absolutely stellar. She has this kind of, not Anatole Florence Pugh vibe. And I think the other performers are great. And did you have kind of everything in place, including the score? Did you have the Is it what's the name of the composer that you had for your film?
Oh, it's Tan.
Yeah.
Tan Sierra. Yeah. So that's actually me and my friend Nick. That's one of our projects, our musical projects. So that's one of our things that we love to do is we play a lot of heavier music, but it's been really fun to explore doing scores and more soundscapes and it's material that helps the images. So that's been really, really cool to do. But that's something, we were lucky enough that we could, because we shot in 2020 and then post went off for quite a bit because there's a lot of visual effects because with the cellar, I kind of filmed ourselves into a bit of a corner in the fact that we couldn't dig super deep. So all those shots from outside is just it's a mat that we had to get VisFX to help us with, which there's a bunch of shots and characters in front of it. So it's not just the easy lock off shots.
Oh, wow. So. It worked. Mm-hmm. I didn't see it. Normally I can see the edges, but that worked really well. You definitely had a better special effect team than some films I watched recently where it's like super janky and looks awful. But yeah, I think that worked. I think that's, you sold that really, really well.
Oh, that's great. Yeah, super talented guy. His name is Eves that we found, a friend of a friend. Again, being in Vancouver, it's like a visual effects hub, which is amazing. So there's a lot of talented people. But the hard thing is, after the pandemic, streamers and everybody was like, they ramped up production on everything. And it was so busy. Everyone was they were working overtime. They were like, everyone was packed. So that's another reason why it took so long. But again, we had no reason to release it if it wasn't ready. So it was fine for us. And so that allowed us to work on the score for a long time, which is really great. It's kind of a blessing. So
is that something you kind of will reflect on going forward in your kind of career? What things you make is looking at those things that those gestation periods where they took much longer and you kind of spent more time looking at it. Do you think you'll, if you've got the choice, spend that time on it?
Absolutely. Yeah. I think, it depends on the project too. Some of them you're kind of ready right out of the gates and you know exactly what the score is going to be, depending on, the tone, what the subject is. But I think any filmmaker would love more time to, when it's right, it's right. There's a point where you can overdo it too as well.
I was reading that the editor of Dune, Villeneuve's Dune, he was editing at home through phases of that, and it was like, that seems crazy that obviously dealing with proxy files, they're small files, but to kind of hone in, and he said it helped him quite a lot. And him and Denis, in terms of talking about the second part, they're going to approach certain aspects of post in the same way, which is really fascinating.
Cool. Yeah. And that's what we did in this one too. Me and my friend, Nick, we did it over Zoom. I just shared my screen and it worked great. It was super helpful. That was one great thing about the pandemic. It did open up the avenues for all the Zoom calls and screen sharing and all that. I guess now we're probably zoomed out a bit, but.
Oh, exactly. Yeah. Like the compression is the one thing for me, the compression of the audio is shocking. So that's all, that'll improve with time.
This sounds good though. Well, you had a good sound.
Yeah, it sounds good, man. Yeah. You're only kind of quite, the books are helping with the sound in your room as well. So
perfect.
Excellent. Yeah. the pandemic helped in some ways. Like because I was working, I was a video producer and I was working at home for the whole time doing kind of tech assistance. That's, I started the Isolation Film Festival and then the Hellbound Festival. And I worked with Alex Proyas was a judge. We had Joe Alves, who's the production designer on Jaws, was a judge for a festival. And it was just like, I had this kind of tunnel vision. I've got to do something creative. I've got to do it online. I've got to help people out. And it was crazy, speaking to these people and working with these people. And it was like, perfectly natural. And I've always had kind of good soft skills when, dealing with people, speaking with people. So I just saw the kind of other end of it. I saw, right, what can we do creatively? I ended up with a beard down here at one point. I'm sure we all did during the pandemic.
Yeah, we all came out, looking a little worse for wear or better. Exactly.
Yeah, exactly.
That's cool to find opportunity in those situations. especially a lot of more people were available to do cool stuff, right?
Like, yeah, that's so true. That was a big thing. Because I got to ask Alex Preuss about I was just obsessed with the rain machines he used in The Crow and how he lit and everything. And he was talking about his virtual production stuff. And now I think he's working on a feature currently, which is looking like it's getting greenlit. Something I wanted to speak to you about was how did you kind of get started in terms of film school or before that? Because it looks from your kind of, you've got a really eclectic IMDb, and what you've worked on has been obviously the highest level, massive stuff. So how did you kind of get started? Was it in direction, or was it picking up a camera? How did you kind of get started?
Yeah, it was one of those things. I grew up in the next province over, Alberta, where it was a little harder to get into film, but it was obviously, it's for a lot of people, it's a passion that they want to pursue, but it's really hard because there's no, like, here's the steps you take and you're guaranteed a job. It's very much like, I don't know, figure it out, but there's ways to get into the film industry. So I actually started, there's a furniture company called The Brick. So I got in with a crew of people who were just shooting like mattresses and like, to the showroom, this Sealy Posturepedics on sale, which was great. It was awesome. I mean, through those people, I met other people that were doing features. And then kind of just, you know, you work with them, they see your hard worker. They're like, you should talk to this person. Then I started in locations. I met the ADs on the show, these great guys. And then they gave me a shot ADing. And then from there, I met some people that were a crew from Vancouver in town, and they brought me out to Vancouver, luckily. And then that's when it kind of, the opportunities were just much more grandiose because, again, Vancouver is such a huge hub for film.
Massive,
yeah. Yeah. And then through there, I met this one second AD, Misha Bukowski, who's super talented and just amazing. And she kind of took me under her wing, and then I just worked my way up with her. And that was my film school. It was the best film school you could ever.
Shooting mattresses.
I think you could have. Well, yeah. I mean, you learn a lot just
practice
basic
the shots and everything. Yeah.
Yeah. And then once you get to like ADing, that's really cool because what that teaches you is how to interact with the crew as well as talents, as well as producers. So you get dropped in the middle of everything, and it's a real sink or swim environment. And it's
absolutely because some people wouldn't, if you know you have a love for that and then you dropped into that and you don't learn to swim, you can drown really easily and start to hate it and want to distance yourself from it. I worked on a couple of projects in I was a runner on Band of Brothers, and then I worked on a couple of features, just kind of post-production stuff. And I wanted, you know, I loved the kind of the chaos of it as well, because yeah. I learned to, that was kind of a, it grows your skin massively, you know, in terms of who you're working with.
Yeah, 100%.
But yeah, you've worked on some huge projects. And what was that kind of, because that's its own, like you say, it's its own film school, learning on the job. And
yeah,
the pressure is so, so different, I guess, working on, you know, like Godzilla or Man of Steel. You were kind of, was it third assistant director? Is that right?
Yeah. So in Canada, it's trainee assistant director, then it's a third AD. So you have a third AD at the trailers. I was a third AD, a third assistant director who was on set with the first AD. So I was really lucky. It was kind of a position that you have on bigger features. So, because I didn't really like working at the trailers. That's a lot of paperwork. You're getting everybody ready through hair and makeup beforehand, and so you're barely on set. And I thrive on set. That's my favorite place to be. So I really lucked out there, and I got in a spot where I could kind of keep on set with the first AD. But yeah, it's really, really eye opening to see at that level how some of it's like held together with duct tape and rewrites come in that same day. Like how so much of the issues that you deal with on an independent set, they're still dealing with on the huge set. And it was really cool to see how the directors responded to the pressure. Like that was the cool thing for me, like knowing that I wanted to be a director myself, which I'm still working to get up there. It was really interesting to see like who sank or swam with that kind of stuff, where it's like, hey, we wrote this scene today. And it's like, cool, great. We'll just take that and we'll figure it out, I guess, on the day. you know, you prep and prep, but it's really funny. Gareth Edwards on Godzilla, he was really, really cool to see that, because
I went to a screening of Monsters years ago in London, and he had his little laptop, and he was showing his After Effects and how he did the sign, you know, changing all the signs and his tanks and everything.
Oh, it's amazing.
What's great about Gareth is he kind of like processed all the, you know, the visual effects and everything, and had a clear understanding of every aspect. And a lot of directors, maybe now more so than ever, because you've got access to, you know, special effects packages quite, you know, for a reasonable price, if not for free. And I really liked how he was a special effects guy and then kind of worked his way up. But what was the kind of, did you kind of speak to him at all or work with him on the much on Godzilla?
Yeah. Well, and that's what's really cool about that position, is that you're always there to, like, you're talking with the director, you're talking with the DP, you're talking with all the actors. You know, you as an assistant director on set, you really get to deal with everything. And it's really cool.
Yeah.
So, and then also you're setting the background, you know, it's like that movie was, that was tough, because there's a lot of military, and it'd be like, all right, we're seeing all this on this massive hill, and you got 20 minutes. You good? And you're like, uh-huh. You just start running and setting it all up. But yeah, it's really good. It's really cool in that respect, that you get to talk to the directors directly. I mean, because you're setting the frame, you're setting the background, you're cueing actors. So you're really involved with the whole process. And Gareth was super cool. I mean, that was his first major, massive movie. I think the budget was like $200 million. So if you can imagine going from your own independent, blowing up, and you're doing Godzilla.
Well, look at what he's done. He's set the bar for Godzilla going forward. You know, like, obviously there's only so much you can show when you're on a certain budget and the effects and everything. I understand what the process is. And then the standard of those films is just so high. And then Rogue One is just such an achievement as well. And, you know, shooting awesome things on the ground, looking up, that, you know, one of his techniques is, as you know, is, you know, from the point of view of a human being on the ground, what's it like looking up and around? You know, you can see that throughout all his work. And all of this experience must have given you like a real fire in your belly to kind of direct yourself and go, right, I want to do this myself, you know?
Yeah, it's being that close and in that orbit, it's really it can be really it gets you energized to do it yourself if that's what you want to do. Like, it's amazing. You want to get that opportunity, you want to jump in there, and it's really fun to be like, especially when you get there early, it's like, how would I set up the scene, how would I shoot it, and you kind of compare it. And again, like, setting the background is really fun to do because it's super interactive, and just seeing how it all comes together. But yeah, it's cool for me though. I mean, there was a point where burnout was 100% a real thing, and I had to step away from it because it was just, as you know, the days are so long.
Yeah.
And then knowing that I wanted to do my own stuff, that's like, when you have a break, the last thing you want to do is get back on set and organize another shoot. So it was like, okay, I got to figure something out here. And so it was kind of at that time where I was feeling like I wasn't getting jaded, but I remember when I was first starting and I would see people on set that were super grumpy or unhappy. And I'd be like, how could you not be so just excited, elated to be on a set? Like, this is what you get to do for a living. I cannot wait to do this. So I was like, if I ever get like that, time to call it in. I don't want to be a grumpy guy on set. And so it was a good time for me to transition. I was lucky enough in Vancouver. I found an opportunity in visual effects, still in production, to kind of, you know, oversee a team of artists. So that's what I currently do, which is still in film. I still get to learn a ton about filmmaking, more in post, which is ever evolving and a great space to be in.
Huge. Yeah. It's always evolving. Yeah.
Oh, it's crazy. Yeah. And it's so cool what they can do. I've been very fortunate that I can still stay within film, you know, as my day job, but the hours were a lot less. So now I'm able to actually write when the workday is done and have energy to still stay motivated, which is a huge thing.
Yeah. That is difficult. And you must've reached a point on those films as well, where I've climbed the ladder, and then there's like a few rungs missing that you have to make a huge leap to. And then you have to either create your own stuff or work at it for another 20 years. And if you become jaded, it's difficult to kind of make that leap.
And it's hard as an AD. Like, I was seeing the end goal, and like, huge respect for first assistant directors. It's just, for me, I was like, I don't know if that's what I'm in. Like, that's, I don't know if that's what I want to sign up my life for. Cause that's like, you are committed. That's hard, man. Like, any scheduling issues, it's like, it all comes down on you. Like, how can we make our day? You know, it's like, well, there's a lot of things, but a lot of it comes down to that. Can be kind of a thankless job, but I mean, I saw some amazing first ADs, and that's a talent. But for me, again, I wanted to be a director. It's not an easy transition to go from a first AD into directing. You know, it's like, and I had a good conversation with one of the producers on, it was on Tomorrowland, Jeffrey Chernoff, who's does huge movies. And I was just like, look, this is kind of what I want to do. Like, what's your recommendation? And it was interesting because he's like, I'm like, I kind of feel like you guys are getting to know me as, oh, Brian's the crew guy. He organizes stuff on set. We'll hire the creatives. Like, don't worry about that. Like, you're great. This is what we know you as. And it's like, no, but I want to be the creative. And it's like, well, you got to go do that.
What's the plan for In the Shadow of God at the moment? Is it, I know you kind of, do you want to make a feature out of the original concept? What's the kind of, what's the plan?
Yeah, I would love the ideas for this to be for a bigger story to explore. So that's something that I got a script ready for. So I'm just, it's, you just hope to get in that room with the people who can make those decisions. So I feel like there might be one or two, but we'll see. I mean, it's hard, man. And there's so many people making stuff. So it's really hard. And it's an interesting point now where people are pulling back from productions, it seems. There's the looming writer's strike. So it'll be interesting to see how that all plays out. But we're going to be released on Alter, I think, in May, which we're really excited about. So that'll be awesome. Cool. So we'll have our online premiere then. And then just polishing up that pitch for when that opportunity comes up. And here's what I got. It's all laid out. It's ready to go.
Yeah.
Just cut that check. I'm not asking a lot.
Oh, I worked on a feature film for, what was it called? It was called Shattered in the US and Butterfly on a Wheel. So I was post-production assistant. And like yourself, you know, I was helping the assistant editor and the editor and the director, literally. And the director now, I think it's Matt Barker. I should remember his name. He'll kill me if he sees this.
But he, we'll bleep that out too.
Yeah, he directs a lot of the Handmaid's Tale.
Oh, wow.
And I forgot what my point was. But yeah, it's having that experience is, I think it's great to a certain point. And I think making that feature is, it was the financing story. Yeah, just to go back to that. And it was so interesting to find out how a $30 million film is financed and how, you know, executives work. And it's a real insight. As soon as you get behind that curtain, it's like, wow, okay.
It's a business.
And the infighting in London, in Soho, between special effects companies, it's like, whoa, okay.
Oh, wow.
So that was amazing.
That was 30 million?
Yeah, it was 30 million, yeah. Yeah, small
huge.
Budget.
that's massive. That would be amazing.
So that was Icon Films. That was, I think it was Bruce Davey. It was Mel Gibson's production partner at Icon.
Right, okay.
So it was really interesting to work on it, but it was very hit and miss with kind of thrillers. I think horror is the big thing, really. You know, if you can get look at Terrifier and Terrifier 2. It's made such crazy money on a micro budget. So,
And there's that Skinamarink that just came out. I don't know, is that big in the UK yet?
I don't think so, no.
It's called Skinamarink. I'll send you a trailer. It's just come out on Shudder. But it was someone who filmed a Canadian director. He went back to his childhood home and shot this really creepy David Lynchian nightmare out there film. It's really cool. But he shot for 15 grand, and I think it grossed like 2 million on a limited run.
Wow.
You're like, yeah, horror's doing okay. And then the director of Barbarian, I mean, his new deal he just signed.
Oh, that was wow. Like, I heard, I don't know if it's true about Jordan Peele's production team that he wanted to buy it and distribute it and help produce it, and that all went pear-shaped, and he was livid about it. Because I think Barbarian was my favorite horror film last year. But I absolutely loved it. And having Bill Skarsgård and was genius. You know, the whole kind of Airbnb idea of double booking, and
it played on so many good fears. Like, what would you do? You know what I mean? Like, it was such a great setup. And then the Justin Long stuff, I thought was it was probably my favorite scenes of the year. I was like, Justin Long was brilliant. How he wrote that character and that, I was just, it was crazy good. Yeah.
And it's got one of the most iconic, there's someone on Twitter, I saw t-shirts he was printing, and obviously didn't have a license to print them. And it was just a bottle of milk with hair on it. And it was just like absolute genius, you know?
Yeah.
I think that, and his role, you know, with his connection with horror, with Tusk and Jeepers Creepers, great casting with him. And my favorite scene is when he's measuring the space.
That's the best scene I've ever, like, yeah, not ever
so
seen.
Good.
But it was my favorite definitely of last year. It was the funniest way to get someone into, like, the danger zone, you know? It's like, and he's so oblivious and so funny. And,
yeah,
God, he just played it great. It was just so well written. Yeah.
Absolutely.
That was great.
Have you been a huge fan of horror? Or is it something you kind of just delved into because of work? Or
no, I think, yeah, horror's always kind of spoke to me, like really dark stuff. I don't know why. But yeah, my dad would always show us great, like, awesome movies when we were young, because he loved, like, Aliens, and he was a big John Carpenter fan as well. So, I, you know, all that plays into it. But he'd be like, you know, like,
I've got a note about that, actually. There's a scene in The Shadow of God. It's a particular shot that you did. And it's when Sarah Canning's character steps up from watching her dad on TV, and it's the VHS quality of the TV. And when the dad steps up on the footage, it reminds me of the dream sequence from Prince of Darkness.
Not the dream.
It's not a dream sequence. It's the message being sent from the future, you know, Prince of Darkness. But yeah, it just reminded me of that. And I'm a huge Carpenter fan, like, you know, like your dad must have been.
Yeah, it was really cool. I mean, They Live, I remember me and my brother rented countless times. I don't know why. We just, like, in kindergarten, like, just watching, like, yeah, They Live again.
Yeah.
And, like, yeah, Aliens, we were going crazy over. It's funny how, yeah, John Carpenter can kind of, you know, it's silly. Some of his movies can be kind of silly on the surface, but, you know, you look at his retrospective. We saw him live, and he was playing clips from all his movies, and it's like, damn, he's just so good.
Oh,
huge
yeah.
Visuals. Like,
I think it's from, I don't know if you can see this poster, but that was from 2016, the music he was playing.
Oh, nice.
He did his performance with his son, Cody.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's, for me, and that's where I became obsessed with Animorphic and trying to shoot Animorphic, but
yeah.
Was that something you were kind of leaned towards? Because did you use spherical lenses with Arri cameras on in The Shadow of God, was it?
Yeah, we were lucky. We used Animorphics. We had a friend who worked at Arri, and she hooked us up with these. I think they were like close to brand new. And so that was amazing. I mean, if you can get the opportunity to shoot with Animorphics, I mean, we were super lucky on this one and my last short film as well. But, you know, you point the camera anywhere with those lenses and it looks so good. It's crazy. But it was interesting. I did have a producer who's, you know, actually a bigger producer, and he watched it, and he's like, he explained the importance of how even lens choice should reflect the story. And that was really interesting to hear. He's like, it's cool, you got Animorphics. He's like, but did that really suit the story? Like, did you need that? And I was like,
Yeah.
It's a good reminder. True. It's like everything visually, it should be helping the story. So that was cool.
Yeah.
But
because research is such a huge thing when it comes to storytelling, and Deakins, I heard Roger Deakins talking about lens choices when it comes to framing actors and how you frame. It's a whole alchemy, and like there's a magic to it as well. And with Animorphic, did you was that always going to be the choice, or was that like just kind of luck, or you wanted that, or?
I mean, I love the look, 100%. Yeah, and it was something that was attainable, so we planned for that. I mean, it's you're also in a situation where it's like, if we didn't get them, whatever lenses we were going to get was going to be great. We'll make it work. Yeah. We had our DP, Jess Wicker, is so talented. He's such a smart guy and such a great filmmaker in his own right. So we could have given him any set of lenses and he really would have helped the story. But yeah, we were fortunate enough to get those anamorphics and we utilized them as best we could, I think. And
definitely. Yeah.
Yeah.
How big was your team on set when you shot?
I think there's about 20 of us, including actors. So we had a camera, we had a DP, a couple assistants, a couple of set deck people that also, we had a lot of people that were just jumping around doing other jobs as well. So like Courtney, who was our art director, she's like, you probably need a scripty, right? I'm like, that would be amazing. She did that for us. And, you know, the guys who were doing the set deck, they'd dig the cellar hole, then they would go help set up lighting because we were super limited with crew. But I mean, it sounds like a lot of people, 20, but I mean, you know, that there's about 5 actors we had out there as well. So,
yeah, that sounds like 12, 15, that but. Sounds like catering staff on a big movie, really. 20 people, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, I'm trying to think of, I remember I had to get 20 ferry reservations for the crew and get them out there. It was a nightmare, but worth it.
Yeah, I know. It absolutely is. It looks, it, you know, everything about it. I'm a big, big fan of it. And I was so happy to kind of have that level of talent to kind of submit to our festival. And it was an absolute pleasure kind of seeing the film, because we love it from, we've had films from someone that's just started in animation. And in the first year we had stop animation from Japan, and it was really interesting to see how it all kind of comes together. And Ian Rayburn, who won the main award for best film for his Blue Devil, he normally films with a couple of other people, but with the film that he won, he was filming himself, and he was talking about the discipline it takes to, because he's an actor, he's been in Strange New Worlds, the Star Trek series as well. But yeah, it's really fascinating to kind of see how your film came together. What was the where did the design come from for the kind of icon of the film? You know, almost like the Blair Witch kind of icon. Where did that kind of come from?
Yeah, that was Courtney, who was our art director. I had another symbol before, kind of a pagan symbol that I lifted off the internet. And she found that one because she helped me do kind of a deep dive to make sure, you know, some of the symbols, you don't know who's taken over those and they could mean something else now. So it's
massively so. I live on an army base and my wife and family are Indian. And there's a very particular symbol that was taken over in the 30s and then 40s that it's painted on one of the houses because there's an Indian family on the army base I live on. But the people that live on the street and army, they understand what it is because there's dots around the swastika. Right. So everyone understands what it is. But then you get some, you know, a layman that might walk past it and see it as only one thing now. So, yeah, that kind of research is essential.
Yeah. And as far as we can tell, we researched it as much as we could. That was an old pagan symbol that the meaning is banishment. So it worked really well for our story. It had a great look. And I'm super helpful or super thankful that we had Courtney on that because she helped so much in that show. But yeah, it's interesting. And because isn't it Nepal? Didn't they steal it from, was that in Nepal?
It's used kind of all over in Nepal. And it's crazy how those things can just get, but like it's on envelopes, like we get sent here from family and all of that.
Oh, but crazy.
It's crazy to think that someone will pass judgment on that because they don't truly understand what it means. But it looks slightly different because it has 4 dots around it, you know.
Right. I mean, it's hard not to react to that one for sure. That's a tough spot.
Yeah, it really is.
I swear I'm not. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I think what was the, oh yeah, I wanted to tell you what my favorite shot of the film was.
Oh, cool.
I've got a couple of last questions, but my favorite shot is when this isn't a spoiler, but when the couple fall off the house.
Oh yeah.
There's something about the weight of that I absolutely love. So I absolutely love that shot.
Oh, that's great to hear.
Yeah, there's a lot to love in the film, really is. What was the last really good horror film that you saw that was relatively new to you?
Ooh. I mean, I think Barbarian was super fun. I fucking love that movie. Men was really, that's we, my friend Nick and I walked out of the theater after seeing that, and we were like, we had to process that for a few minutes. It's like, whoo,
it's what's the actor, Rory something?
Oh, yeah,
he's in Bond, and he's in Penny Dreadful as well as Frankenstein's Monster. I think it's Rory Cochrane. I think it might be Rory
that
Cochran.
Sounds right, yeah.
But yeah, great film.
Alex Garland is he's so, man, please don't stop making movies, Alex Garland. And the score to that was insane. It looked so good. I'm just so happy when I see movies like that and they get a theatrical release and they get a big budget. That's so exciting. But yeah, that was great.
Absolutely. Like when I saw Barbarian, I was like, oh my God, I'm so happy this got made. It was like this, you have this kind of nervous energy that you want to just kind of shout out to the hills that, I'm great. I'm really happy about this this deal he's got, and more power to him because
And he got final cut on his next one. It's like great,
it's the
work,
ultimate cosmic power, that, isn't it?
That's insane. I mean, yeah, what, him, Tarantino, and Spielberg are what, like the only three people that have that right now? Like, but yeah, and I think also Pearl and X were, that was a treat to get those movies from.
Yeah,
Ty West.
Brilliant. Yeah.
Yeah, what a great comeback. He took that break, and yeah, those movies really shone. Those are awesome. Ooh, I mean, and also Infinity Pool. Please keep giving Brandon Cronenberg more money to make those insane movies.
Absolutely. Well, Brian, this has been an absolute pleasure, my friend. And
yeah, likewise.
Long time coming. Sorry it's taken so long to kind of organize.
No worries. And again, thanks for, you know, having the Rule Breaker Award and allowing our film in, because I know it's longer than 15, and yeah, I knew again. That's what I was told in my last short film. It's like, it's a little long to program. So I knew it was going to be problematic. But again, thanks. It's
And keep that symbol. If you go to feature with this, keep that symbol in the film, because it's like, it's one of those things that's brandable, you know?
Yeah. That's cool. That's great to hear. And thanks again for that poster. When you do those custom artwork, that is one of the coolest things. It felt like very accustomed to our short, which is great. Like, that symbol wouldn't be in a lot of spots for you to easily grab. So it felt great, even if it was AI. Like, I still want to print that off and hang that up. It's that was really cool. I think that's a cool thing you have, because it doesn't feel, I don't know, it's still personal, even if you're using AI. You're still making it about independent film, and it's such a great thing for filmmakers to receive. Anyways, so I think you should keep that up. That's great.
Yeah, and it was one of those things where I watched the film a couple of times for everyone's submission, because I produced the art for every film that came out. And then I thought, it has to represent the core, the film, the tone of the film, the themes of the film. And I was really quite happy with it. And more power to you, Brian, and an absolute pleasure, my friend.
Yeah. Cheers. Thanks so much, Alex. And I'm looking forward to your projects that you're going to be directing. So
same, likewise. Keep posted. And if you've got any tips with speaking to the director of Spiral, then just fire those tips my way as well.
Done. Yeah, 100%. We'll set that up.
But yeah, it's a great guy. Anything going forward that you'd like for us to kind of just kind of push out, we're very happy to kind of promote anything that you've kind of got going on.
We are working on, there's a really cool label that we're working with that's going to put out my last short film and this, In the Shadow of God, the score, on vinyl.
Amazing,
as well as a Blu-ray release. So that'll be coming out hopefully around May as well for the online release. So we're going to have a cool package that you can order. Will be both
director's,
scores.
Director's commentary on the Blu-ray?
Ooh, I never thought about
Gotta
that.
Gotta do it, man. Gotta do it.
That would be fun. You know what? I'm gonna record that really quick. Get that in there before it goes into the production.
Please do, because it's a real gem. Like Carpenter's commentaries on his films, I think that Kurt Russell on the thing.
Him and Kurt Russell, they're the best. Those are the greatest. My God. Anyways, but that's a good idea. I think we'll do that.
Awesome, man.
Cool,
have
man.
Have a good day. Thank you for this.
Thank you so much, Alex.
See ya. Bye bye.
All right. See ya.